This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly sponsored by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. As a City supporter, we know you value delivery, and McDelivery is up there with the very best. You'll always be winning with McDelivery because just like Kevin De Bruyne, McDelivery puts your order right on a plate. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered as well. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for you tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Blink and you miss it. That is City's schedule at the moment. Just hours after the Madrid heartbreak, the boys are back at it again. We're in tired, fuck you territory, everyone. I'm Amos Murphy.
I'm Nobbins.
And this is the City Report Podcast.
Here for Gundogan! It is a thrilling start for Manchester City. The fastest ever goal in an FA Cup final. 2023 is the City treble year. Champions of England, FA Cup winners, and now, at last, champions of Europe. Manchester City are kings of Europe. Now they have their triple crown.
Welcome, listeners. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I hope you're feeling a little bit more lively than Thursday morning. We're with you on Friday, so happy Friday, everyone. The weekend is nearly here, even though it's been a little bit of a, what would you say? It's been not traumatic, Nobbins, but it's been an emotional weekend, I guess, with the midweek
heartbreak.
A roller
coaster of emotions.
There we go. There we go. And up and down as well. We actually are recording on the Thursday, and we've just seen Mr. Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool, I think you can say, crash out of European competition, secondary European competition, of course, leaving just Aston Villa left in Europe, which I think you'd have got good odds at that at the semi-final stage earlier in the season.
Yeah, they're flying the flag for England, and it means that despite what Liverpool fans say, Klopp will not be leaving Liverpool, having won one of each trophy, because he's failed to win the Europa League for the second time. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
There we go. Look at that, already at it. Okay, let's get into today's episode, because we'll pick up the pieces, basically. Hopefully, listeners that did join us yesterday, no qualms if you didn't. I completely understand it is difficult to sort of take in that content the day after defeat. Depends, some people are different. Some people want that sort of that therapy and wondering why things happened and why it went as it did. Some of us are just like, shut it all off. Hopefully you did listen. If not, you can go back on your podcast feed. But we'll pick up the pieces from some of the conversations that we've been having since. And I wanted to speak about this concept, I guess, of results bias, which you've done a few tweets about, Nobbins. You've had some things to say, because the narrative, as narratives do, seem to be running with this Ancelotti masterclass. City were outdone. Pep has failed in Europe again. It's probably not as binary as that, is it?
No, absolutely not. And that's the crux of outcome bias, results-based analysis, whatever you want to call it. This idea that people don't actually take in the game itself, and instead they just see the final score and then they make their conclusions from that, which is a totally flawed thing to do. If you think of, like, you know, what is good science? You don't start with a conclusion and then build your hypothesis around that. You begin with a hypothesis, a theory.
It'd be a lot more fun, wouldn't it? If that's how you did it. The experiments would be much funner.
And it would put so many analysts out of a job. If it's that simple as just going, oh, well, this was 2-1, I guess the team that won was blooming marvellous, and the team that lost was rubbish by comparison. Yeah, and what makes it even more frustrating is the manner in which the game was decided was a penalty shootout. Now, whatever your thoughts are on penalties, I think it's safe to say that it's the closest thing to a lottery in football, really. Obviously, it's more than just a 50-50 coin flip, whatever. But for the most part, anything can happen in a penalty shootout. So this idea that because Real Madrid just happened to win the penalty shootout, that therefore means that it's this, as we were discussing off camera, this brilliant defensive tactical masterclass. It just confuses me, because what would the narrative be had City happened to win the penalty shootout? What if Lunin dived when Bernardo took his penalty? What if he stayed still for Kovacic's penalty? Would we then be talking about how Real Madrid were actually pretty toothless and they should have tried to take the game to City? It's far too easy, and it's not. And the way this Real Madrid defensive display is being dressed up, I'm not saying it was bad, obviously it was a decent defensive display, but they're being treated like how when Arsenal came to the Etihad. Now, whether we think that was the correct or incorrect decision from Arsenal to defend, and ultimately they defended very well, and I can't remember City having any chances from open play. That was a very good out of possession defensive quote masterclass. Real Madrid allowed Manchester City numerous big chances in the game. The main one for me was that Kevin De Bruyne one in around the 80th minute, where Kanji plays it across.
Just after scoring as well.
Exactly.
And that's when the momentum was there.
100%. There was that one. There was also the one which hit Foden's standing leg. Haaland hit the crossbar. Grealish should have done better with a couple shots. This was not some sort of brilliant, 90s AC Milan defensive display. There were flaws in their defending by virtue of the fact that if you concede big chances, in my opinion, you haven't defended particularly well by definition. So it's frustrating. And obviously I'm frustrated that City got knocked out. But as I tweeted earlier today, I'm actually even more frustrated that it just feeds into, as we discuss, this outcome bias. And it's just incredibly frustrating as someone like me who actually likes to, I like to try to analyze the game and see what actually were the storylines. It's too reductive, in my opinion, to limit it to the results and the results alone.
Yeah, I can tell that felt good. It feels like you've had a real let off there.
That was a rant.
I completely understand. We were like that yesterday on the show. I'm sure these Blues everywhere who were like, oh my God, even if it's in front of the mirror, just let me rant, because it was one of those games you walk away at. I mean, I've had plenty of rants, both sort of on the mic and off the mic, some more expletives than others, but just where you're like, oh my God, why? Because it's one of those games, wasn't it, where it just throw up so many questions about football, and you're like, why? How does this make sense that one team can be so good, one team can be so bad, and yet at the end of the day, the result throws up a different scoreline than you'd expect? I guess, lots of the talk has been on about luck. Pep Guardiola actually said, he quoted Johan Cruyff, who said something like, luck doesn't exist in football, which I think is... Well, I think he's talking shit, to be honest with you, because I think you can have plenty of luck. But I get the sentiment. Saying that, though, City in Istanbul, they had plenty of luck. Lukaku blocking a teammate's shot, and Ruben Diaz with a fantastic header, but Edison getting the sort of just hitting him, the ball just hitting him in one of the efforts. That's the Champions League, isn't it, really? And I think if we're going to do any analysing, it's probably that's kind of what you get in this competition.
And that's also why people love it. There's nothing wrong with that. People love knockout football. People love the Champions League because, as you've rightly put there, anything can happen. It's a game of moments. It's a competition of moments, sorry. Anyone can beat anyone on a given night. The best team doesn't necessarily win the Champions League. This is well known, hopefully. There are a number of examples of the best team not winning the competition. The most notorious ones, Liverpool 2005, Chelsea 2012, Chelsea against us. I feel like they clearly weren't the best team in Europe at that time, yet they won. If Real Madrid go on to win this competition, fair play to them. I personally wouldn't describe them as the best team in the world right now. One of the best teams in the world, Inter Milan. They got knocked out by Atletico Madrid again on penalties. So yeah, and this is why we love the Champions League, because it's unpredictable. And once again, on a given night, on a given moment, anyone can beat anyone over 90 minutes, over 180 minutes. Or, as is the case in our tie, just draw twice and go to penalties.
I think one of our other contributors, Alex Michel, said before a ball was kicked in any of these two games, said that Real Madrid fans were sort of hoping to play for penalties from the start, before the game in the Bernabeu, and it seems to have transpired. It's frustrating, but it is what it is. But do you reckon, and we'll turn attention to the Chelsea game in part two, because obviously that's coming around very quickly, in fact, probably too quickly. Could it be a blessing for City? Because I don't know about you, but it's felt like throughout this season, I'm not going to necessarily call it a transition season as such, because with Guardiola, there never seems to be this massive overhaul of players, you know, 6 or 7 exits, 5, 6, 7 incomings, whatever it might be. But there was transitions. Big leaders were left leaving the dressing room, Gundogan, Mahrez, players who were coming in, not necessarily the same play style. City have looked a little bit dodgy at times. They've looked scintillating at others. And I don't know, we're speaking about a double treble. At least we were speaking about a double treble. And it just never felt like it was really there. I don't know about you. And maybe this is a benefit, a blessing in disguise for City to now go on and achieve what, for me anyway, is the main prize of a historic, never done before, 4 in a row league titles.
Yeah, it's definitely been a weird season, hasn't it? It's been part transition, part not. The main departure obviously being Ilkay Gundogan. That's led to many squad imbalances, I think. That's led to a lot of headaches for Guardiola. I think, you know, we're in mid to late April. I don't think Pep knows what his best team is still. I think that there are still things that he's trying to iron out, and it might come to pass that it's not possible for him to iron out those issues with the current personnel. We obviously tried to replace Gundogan in the summer. We didn't do that by one reason or another. You'd like to think that would happen in the summer. And maybe we can, you know, in hindsight, at the end of the season, look at it as a potentially, you know, transitional or half transitional season. The fact that we somehow, despite this being one of our, you know, worst seasons in terms of, you know, that period in November, December, especially, the fact that we are currently top of the table is a bit mad. I think that most people would say that we've not performed anywhere near what we would have expected this squad to have done in terms of their individual quality. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in the summer. Is it a blessing? I mean, I think you always want to be in every single competition, but we saw at the end of that game, these players are dead. They are shattered. So maybe if we can take anything from it, maybe we can take the fact that we don't have to play, you know, a further two games, high intensity games in the semi-final. Maybe that's the silver lining. I'd still like to be in the competition. Sure, the players would, obviously. But, you know, you've got players asking to come off. They're carrying knocks. They were fighting on all three fronts. Business end of the Premier League now. We need them all fit and firing. So maybe that's a silver lining you can take.
Yeah, yeah. And I've parroted this line a number of times on this show where to win a treble, you not only have to be perfect, but you have to have the luck at the same time. And that we saw that last season. And I just don't know if City have had that luck this season. And the City have been great and they've not won matches. Real Madrid was another example of that where this is going to sound silly because it was a clear one or two levels below. But I do think there was some sort of comparisons to make with the way City played against Real Madrid last season, in the sense that it was just pure domination, almost from the first whistle. Bar the first 10-15 minutes, City, and the game state was so much different. It's hard to tell. Had City taken the lead, Real Madrid would have opened up. Who knows, blah, blah, blah. But Guardiola coached a decent enough game. He coached a game to win, and it was down, I think, to some personal deficiencies. Hey, that is football though, isn't it? And unfortunately, that is City's Champions League done and dusted. Listeners, that was a quick part 1. We'll be back in part 2. We've got another game, Jesus, another semi-final to look forward to, although it does feel like it could be a little bit of a tough one at the weekend against Chelsea. So stay exactly where you are. We'll be back in a moment.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The Etihad Stadium really is wonderful at this time of the season, and the same goes for McDelivery. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Welcome back to the City Report podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content. Right then, let's get our teeth, if we can, into this Chelsea game. Does Moonbeam start up front, do you reckon? Do you, Brandon the Kit Man, is he playing right wing?
Manchester, I would have gone for, personally.
Okay, yeah. Is Moonbeam a flop? Is she on fraud watch? Is that what we're saying? Basically, who on earth plays in this game? Because we saw Haaland sort of asked to come off. We saw Kevin De Bruyne later on in that game. Rodri looked a little bit like, to go back and use the childish names, he looked a little bit like Plodri at the end of that 120 minutes, which is completely understandable. The guy put everything and more in, but he just couldn't. There was one moment, I think, it was possibly the Vinny Jr. Threw on goal and Kyle Walker pushed him off it, where Rodri's then trying to get to the other end. And I was looking at him, he was like, oh my God, mate, you look like you're playing veteran football. But it's difficult to sort of even imagine what the 11 could look like come tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, and the other factor is that we're playing a weird team in Chelsea. I was going to say a very good team in Chelsea, but the annoying thing is they aren't, because they're like mid-table. However, yeah, we failed to beat them on two occasions, so I guess I do have to say that they are very good, particularly when they play us. This is their season, this FA Cup run. They're obviously not in any of the competition. They're not, you know, going to get a Champions League space. So this basically is their, they lost the League Cup final. This is their time to actually do something. Their players will have obviously had a lot more rest than ours. They'll have been so happy to see us go to extra time and then penalties, it gets some exhaustion in our players' legs. So you'd imagine they would be at absolute full strength in terms of the players they have available. And so I actually don't know what Pep's going to do, because we've still got some really important Premier League games to come as well, some really tricky away games coming up. You would obviously assume, like Ortega would start, but maybe players like, Rico Lewis, Oscar Bob, still very good players, still first teamers. So it's not like it's an issue starting them. But then you look at the more senior players, the Haaland, De Bruyne, Foden, Rodri. Do you risk it? Do you give them a rest? Rodri's the main one, obviously, because the team seems to go down a noticeable level without even a subpar Rodri, as he has been
the
past few games.
Even if he's dead, do you risk him? Because I think I was having this chat actually today with a friend, and saying they were coming out from the angle of, this is a great opportunity for City to shake off that defeat in quotation marks, obviously penalties, against Real Madrid, chance to go through to the FA Cup final. They wanted Guardiola to say, basically, if they are fit enough to play, they wanted them to. And I was coming at it saying, okay, cool, but there are six finals to come in the Premier League. That has to be the priority. And as much as it would be great to go and defend the FA Cup, probably against Manchester United again, I'm looking at this as a chance to get those players out of the firing line who have played a lot of minutes. Rodri, obviously, first and foremost in that list. And maybe, for want of a better word, throw this game away. I don't know if that's me just being negative. If they can go and do it, I'm sure they can. But it doesn't feel like they're going to be able to, given what they put in on Wednesday night.
Not throw away, prioritise.
Yes, that's the diplomatic way of putting
it. That's the PC word there. Yeah,
the woke way.
Yeah. No, I think, I'm pretty sympathetic to that. And ultimately, we do have a squad of good players outside of our Rodri's and De Bruyne, Hall and Foden's. I know you can say it's, quote, only Luton. But I thought that Kovacic and Nunes did a good job in the midfield against Luton, for example. Rodri didn't feature that day. We can maybe place Bernardo in the middle. Maybe, you Yolo and play Lewis in the middle. I don't know. But there's nothing inherently weak about having Kovacic and Nunes in the midfield. Certainly, like, without the ball anyway, they're actually quite solid from what I've seen. So, because the question becomes, if you don't rest Rodri now, and he clearly needs to be rested, when do you? And the answer to that is, you can't. You can't rest him in any Premier League game from now to the end of the season. He must play in every single one. And I'd only entertain, taking him off if we're like, you know, 3-0 up or something. So yeah, I think that we've got to trust our squad. We are more than 11 players, and we've got to trust Kovacic, Nunes, Lewis, whoever it may be. I would probably err on the side of resting Rodri personally.
I tell you what, let's do the impossible and put 11 together, because picking Pep Guardiola 11s is difficult enough at the best of times. This is like quantum physics heading into this game. I'm not looking forward to it. So I'm just going to quickly pull up the starting 11 from Wednesday night. And let's see. Edison, Kyle Walker, Akanji, Diaz, Guardiola, Rodri, Foden, De Bruyne, Bernardo Silva, Jack Grealish, Haaland. Now, let's go on the assumption that, well, City went into the game with a fully fit squad. The levels of fitness, we're not too sure. John Stones managed to play 10 minutes, which, I mean, you've got to think that he wasn't fully fit to start the game, which is, you know, which if he wasn't, then Jesus. So, you know, maybe he comes in, maybe he doesn't. Haaland obviously went off. De Bruyne went off. Let's put that down to fatigue. In this ideal world, we might get a word from Pep later on in the press conference to say no. So, assuming that, Ortega in net, I guess?
Yeah, 100%, yeah.
Cool. Rico Lewis, I assume, comes back in. He's played quite a few games. I think it was only the Real Madrid away match that he didn't start. Obviously, he came off the bench against Arsenal as well. So, he's played, what is it, 3 of the last 4 or 4 of the last 5 or something like that. So, are we putting him in
there? Yeah, also Walker's only just come back from injury and he had an intense game against Vinicius. So I think it makes sense to start Lewis, yeah.
Cool. Opposite side, we saw Nathan Ake back on the bench. He's been on the bench for the last 2 matches. Does he come in against his, well, former team?
He needs minutes in his legs. So if he's available, why not? Let's pop him in, I reckon. Give Guardiola a bit of a rest.
So that puts forward an interesting question, doesn't it, for the centre-back partnership, because Diaz, absolute immense performance, but he's probably one of those who's towards the red. Akanji, I rated a lot, even though it wasn't his position. He had his deficiencies sort of when City got into that final third, which wasn't necessarily his fault, but he was being asked to do a job and seemed to do it well enough. He was another one who came off with fatigue. So that could be a problem area, couldn't it, if you're looking at the options City have?
Yeah, I think that, although we obviously don't know the fitness situation, but we need to get the sharpness back into John Stones' legs, for example. So if he's like fit, but just wasn't like fully sharp or whatever, I'd maybe like to see Stones start, maybe be partnered with either Akanji or Ake, and then you pop Guardiola at left back instead. If we can maybe give Ruben a bit of a rest, that might be ideal.
Yeah, I reckon so. That's probably the most fluid part of the pitch anyway. It's when we get into this sort of front six where I think questions start to be asked a little bit. Are we saying Kovacic for Rodri? I wouldn't be surprised if Rodri starts, put it that way, but fingers crossed he doesn't, because I think it could torch City season if anything happens to him.
Yeah, let's assume that we're going to bench Rodri. Let's go for Kova, and obviously, you know, Lewis will be popping into the midfield, either alongside Rodri or just ahead of him. Yeah.
So that leaves, what is it, 5 positions to fill. Hit me with what you think you would have as the front 5. So let's go for the 2 midfielders as usual, wide man, centre forward. The floor is yours, Nobbins.
So I was so impressed with Doku when he came on against Real Madrid.
Yeah, he was great.
I'd love to see him start. I want Bob in the team as well. I also want Nunes in the team, and I think Alvarez should start as well. Again, if the idea is that we're trying to rest and rotate a little bit, so let's pop Alvarez up top as the main striker. Definitely Nunes in one of the midfield, in one of like the 2 midfield positions, just so he can tuck in alongside Kovacic without the ball. I'm just debating whether there's a way that we can maybe play Bob centrally, because he's so good in those pockets. I really like watching him in the midfield rather than out wide.
Be Grealish then, wouldn't it, if that's the case on the left-hand side, or Foden playing out on the right?
I'd like Foden to be rested, and I think I might like Grealish to start, because I know that he's played a fair few games for us, but still, it was only a few weeks ago where he got injured, so... Again, I think we can still up his sharpness there. Yeah, so let's have Grealish out on the left, we're saying Doku on the right, where he can simplify his game. Nunes and Bob in the middle, Alvarez up top. Well, that's pretty good, I think. That's a strong team.
As you're saying it now, I'm nodding my head and I'm going, that, well, obviously it's a good enough team to beat Chelsea because Chelsea are a car crash, but Chelsea also have a good enough team to at least get a draw from us, and who knows, Jesus could have another penalty shootout. That's a good enough team to beat Chelsea, surely.
Yeah, 100%. Look, even our bench players are good players. Lewis is a first teamer. Bob is a first teamer. I don't care if he was only an academy player last season. He's not just good for an academy player. He's just good. He's just a good player right now. There's definitely, I think you've got enough options in attack there. You've got a more dynamic winger in Doku, a more conservative winger in Grealish. You've got a player in Nunes who is really good in big spaces. You've got a player in Bob who's really good in small spaces. I think that's quite a nice team, to be fair, that we've made. And it's actually a lot stronger than I thought it was going to be, even without Rodri, De Bruyne, Hall and Foden. I think that's a nice team.
Yeah, totally. I'm just looking at it now. I wouldn't be surprised if we see actually Haaland starting, because he played 90 minutes, didn't he? So you'd possibly back him to go Wednesday night, Saturday. That's a typical kind of schedule. He didn't have the extra 30 minutes in his legs, unless there's an issue. I wonder if that means then Alvarez playing behind him, if you don't have De Bruyne, if you don't have Phil Foden in there as his sort of, we kind of saw it earlier on in the season, which I didn't hate it at the time. It seems to have regressed a little bit, but that was obviously with Rodri in the team, and I think that makes everything so important and allows the other players to be expressive and sort of have the freedom to create. With Kovacic in there, solid number, but I don't know if that would work with that. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. Just quickly then, before we get out on here, just sort of looking ahead to the rest of the season, because I'd be interested to get your insight on this. We now know all three title challengers in the Premier League are out of European competition. Arsenal obviously getting beat by Bayern Munich, City getting beat by Real Madrid, and Liverpool going out to Atalanta, which is still quite funny. But hey-ho. What do you think happens then? You know, crystal ball from here on in. We've got 2 points separating the top three. There's six games each. Liverpool and Arsenal both play twice before City play in the Premier League. Could mean one of them goes 4 points clear. Could mean that City, even if they might drop out from first, get an opportunity to extend that lead. This feels like it's sort of all teams out of Europe, crunch time, eyes on the prize, six games to go. Give us what you've got.
Yeah, it's that classic cliche of every game's a cup final from now. Every game is a must win. That must be the mentality going in, obviously. I think that all three teams drop points from now until the end of the season. Agreed. At least once. Maybe even twice in some cases. Arsenal have a very, very hard run. United aren't great, but that game at Old Trafford is United's last home game of the season. So you better believe they'll be desperate to make sure that Arsenal don't beat them at Old Trafford. There's a North London derby in there for them as well. We obviously go away to Spurs. Liverpool host Spurs at Anfield, and there's the whole storyline there of the controversy earlier in the season. Liverpool will try to right that wrong, but will they be able to do it? You know, they haven't been great at Anfield in recent weeks.
They haven't been great in full stop.
No, yes, exactly. So, yeah, I don't think that City will lose a game. I think we might draw one. The most
a
obvious
bit
one
like
is...
like 2021-22. Was it West Ham away?
Yes. Penultimate game of the season.
And Mahrez missed penalty, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and two Zinchenko errors as well, if memory serves. Yeah, I think that the obvious one to earmark is Spurs away, but there's also some other trickier games in there. People look at Forest away as a certainty. We drew there last season, guys. That's not a certainty at all. So I think we'll drop at least 2 points. I could maybe see Arsenal dropping 4 points. I can maybe see Liverpool dropping 2 to 4 points. So by my crystal ball prediction, I've therefore committed to us saying that we're going to win the Premier League.
Clip it up. There we go.
No pressure, guys.
Yeah. Just looking at the schedule now, because I think it's probably, we did this a couple of weeks ago and I think there was 8 games left and we said, oh, this team will win here, this team will lose there. It never works like that. We know that by now. But just looking at the schedule, it's too early to call, but I think if one team's going to drop out, it's going to be Liverpool, just because they're on a downward slope. They haven't been great and they have certainly had the luck. They have been good at times, and they've played some wonderful football. But how many times have we seen them pop up in a 98th minute with a winner?
So annoying.
Exactly. You know, I think it's something like in 21 games they've gone behind in the first. They've conceded the first goal. So if there is going to be a team dropping out, I reckon it will be them. So that obviously leaves Arsenal as the competitor. And I reckon with Arsenal, it isn't necessarily about the six games. It's probably more about the next three, because they have Wolves away, they have Arsenal at home, they have Tottenham away. Say, for example, and obviously two of those they play before City play in the Premier League again. Say, for example, they take 9 from 9, City maybe slip up, maybe they don't. That's, I reckon, when the pressure starts to build, because yes, United away is a toughie, but either side of that, they've got home games against Bournemouth, they've got home games against Everton. That's, I think, if Arsenal can put the mental deficiencies they've had to bed after the last week, losing to Villa, going out against Bayern Munich, I still think they could finish quite strong.
Definitely. The question mark is on mentality. I thought that Arsenal had got over that hurdle this season. This seemed like a stronger side mentally. But if I was an Arsenal fan, what would have disappointed me most about the Aston Villa defeat, it wasn't even the first goal going in. It was the reaction after that goal went in, because it was the 85th minute, and there was obviously going to be lots of added time. I think at the end there was 8 minutes of added time. So there's plenty of time to get back into the game. But a minute after that, Jorginho attempts that, you know, that really tricky eye of the needle hero through ball.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
And it's just so unnecessary. And that's surprising from an experienced player like Jorginho. So there is clearly still this mental block and this lack of, almost like a lack of maturity in their decision making at times. So I think I'm with you.
Like, as you've just said that, yeah, I had a sort of a brain wave. It felt a little bit like City away at Real Madrid in 21-22. City concede the first goal. Is it Rodrigo who scores it? Cancelo gets the ball, and he just sort of, different scenario, but just lumps it up to sort of try and, I can't remember what play it was, try and play a sort of a through ball into the space behind. Those mistakes, and I know Jorginho has been there and done it, he's won plenty, but it's, as a team, until you've made those mistakes, you don't know not to make them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. So there's very good evidence to suggest they might make more of those mistakes come the rest of the season. They've been a bit of a slump in terms of, you know, getting knocked out by Bayern Munich, losing to Aston Villa. They were top of the table. Now they're second, obviously. There can definitely be another one or two mental stumbles if it gets to, like, you know, the 60th minute and they still haven't scored and they're in a situation where they must win and the opponent knows they must win. That is where they can potentially be the most vulnerable. That's where their opponents can then go, we can have these on the counter potentially. It's going to be so crucial, those like next three or four games that you mentioned. It's going to be massive.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. Final point then, and a bit of a tricky question, but, you know, that's what we're here to do. Do you think it's better or worse for City's title challenge if they were to go through or go out against Chelsea tomorrow? Because on one hand, you've got City bouncing back, they're getting a win, they're into the FA Cup final. The other hand, you've got, okay, they maybe have done some rotation and they've just got sole focus on the final six games of the Premier League season. I guess Pep Guardiola would love to get through to the FA Cup final, so that's going to be his sort of standpoint. But, you know, from the supporters' point of view, what do you think would be the better outcome?
Definitely to win. Definitely to get to the final. Mm-hmm. But if it was, we could maybe have the conversation if we were still at, you know, quarterfinal stage. But this is a semi-final. There's only the final to come, which, unless I'm mistaken, comes at the end of all the Premier League games anyway. So it's not like it's going to be a distraction. It's not like it's going to be a fitness concern. The Premier League games will come all before then, and then you can focus fully on the final. So yeah, I think the players will obviously want to bounce back. They'll want to know that there's potentially another Manchester Derby FA Cup final to come. Who knows? Maybe Coventry will win. But it's more likely that it'll be a Manchester Derby final. I think that'll honestly fire them up more. We know from like the documentary on these guys, these are, you know, elite players in respect of mentality. I think they'll desire that challenge. They'll want to end the season strong, and they'll want to do the double, which is still an incredible accomplishment, by the way.
Yeah, and there is obviously the massive mental impact that losing two games could do for the squad.
Yeah, Brighton, and getting knocked out of two competitions in the space of four-ish days.
Yeah, you're going from a potential treble to sole one competition, and that could be a big blow in the dressing room. Who knows? Plenty to play, though. It feels like we're strapping the seatbelts in, and even though there's, what, a month, it's literally a month until the final day of the season, feels like there could be a lifetime in between it.
Mm, definitely, yeah. It's just been a weird season. I feel like it was going so slowly, and then all of a sudden we're nearing the end. It's just been such a weird, that's my perspective anyway, it's just been such a weird season. Hopefully, I know everyone's obviously down, getting knocked out of the Champions League, but we can still make history. We can still win four in a row. Never done in Premier League history, never done in English football history since the first league season in the late 19th century. That would be mental if we're able to do that. Still an unbelievable achievement if we can get over the line.
Yeah, I take exactly what you said. You're saying about the long season. I'm still stuck in Istanbul personally, and I think most people probably are. And I don't think we ever will get away from that. But hey, that's the life of a football sport, isn't it? Nobbins, thank you very much. Really enjoyed that. You're welcome back anytime.
Well, thank you so much for having me, mate.
Absolute pleasure. Listeners, thank you. That's another week. God, they're going quickly, aren't they? If you enjoyed it, please hit follow. Hit subscribe. Hopefully we'll be back after the weekend celebrating another Manchester City final appearance. Fingers crossed. We'll have to wait and see. But until then, it's been a pleasure. We'll see you later. Make sure you're geared up for Man City's end of season running with McDelivery. Great food delivered right to your door. By using McDelivery, you won't miss a moment of City's crucial running, and just like Kevin De Bruyne, they deliver your order exactly where you want it. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? At participating restaurants only, 18 and plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.